The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by Gamefly. Gamefly is a way to buy and rent all your favorite games while saving money. Go to Gamefly.com, pick your favorite games, and have them mailed directly to your door. Go to Gamefly.com/Beyond to start your free premium 30-day trial today. Play some games!
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 That is the name of the show. It is Beyond, number 485. My goodness. That's so many of them.
They grow up so fast when an old
Wowzers.
Man that is.
Jiminy Crimbus. Anyway, I'm Max Scoville. That's Brian Altano.
Hey.
That's Marty Sliva.
Hello.
And joining us is Miranda Sanchez.
Hello.
What's up? What's going on, everybody?
Wow, you really rolled it.
We got like one email that was like, I liked that really unprofessional intro you did, so I'm sticking with it.
Okay,
perfect. Used to it.
Yeah. Ooh,
perfect.
Structure.
We're doing it.
Anyway, Mass Effect Andromeda is the big thing we're going to be talking about today. Is it out? Are people playing it?
It's out today.
It's out today. Okay.
Yeah.
It was tough to tell because it was like so many retailers broke the street date on this thing.
Well, and also, if you had an Xbox, you could play it on EA Early Access, like first 10 hours.
Yeah.
Or Origin, yeah, that's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Now, Miranda, you've been working on the guides for this.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm very tired.
Yeah.
I'm so tired.
And you're like a huge Mass Effect fan, right?
Yeah, I love them. I've played through the series twice, which is not a lot, but I played it for the first time last year, and I finished my first playthrough in a month of all three games.
Oh, wow.
So I love them
intense.
A lot.
Yeah. So what's your take on Andromeda? Because a lot of people are seeing it as like, I don't know, disappointment, but I think it's not quite up to the same like gold standard as the rest of the series. And
for sure.
Yeah.
So my biggest disappointment was going in and not having those big character introductions, or that's at least what stood out to me within the first, 10 hours or so.
Like in the movie Suicide Squad.
Yeah, of course.
God!
Just like that. So a lot of people just like happen to be on your ship or like, hey, you're shooting and I'm shooting, so let's just team up, which I think is a really big disappointment because I think, or at least for me, one of the biggest strengths of Mass Effect is its characters and how they introduce
right.
it and the bonds that you get with them
yeah.
over the three games. And of course, this isn't going to have the same thing
right,
within
right.
three games and compile into one. But just the way that they're introduced just doesn't allow you as much time with each of them,
yeah.
Which I think is a really big shame because then you don't really get to know them unless you make the effort to go and know them.
Mm. Yeah, and that's a huge difference, especially from Mass Effect 1, which is the only Mass Effect I've played before Andromeda, which I just finished. But so quickly in that game, that first mission, you get to know Caden and Ashley, who both kind of suck. One of them's a racist, and one of them will die at the end of the game, so it's fine. But then on the Citadel, like 2 hours into the game, you meet Rex and Garrus, who were both awesome and probably my two favorite characters in the game. So quickly you were introduced to these characters who have this amazing dynamic with each other, and like you start learning more about them and their view of the universe as a whole and sort of what their species have gone through throughout history, which I'm about 6 hours into Andromeda, I just haven't really gotten. And it's also weird because whereas playing the original Mass Effect, it feels like you're discovering all these new races and these new species, and you're like, oh, well, why do these two hate each other? And what was the genophage about? And what was all this about? Whereas here, it feels like, it's like, well, these are all the same aliens, And I feel like the universe is so big that I should be introduced to just constant streams of new things.
So,
right.
There are reasons for that. Like, yeah. It's not necessarily a good excuse, maybe, for why they could have at least had a few more races native to Andromeda, but there are believable reasons as to why there's not, okay. Which I don't really want to spoil because it is story details.
But they justify it.
Yeah, I mean, like, they don't come out and say, this is why we don't have more races here. But it's, if you put it, the logic together in your head, like, okay, well, I could see why.
Yeah.
Because, like, a big point of this game is going and colonizing worlds, but you have to make them habitable first because it's like, hey, if you go outside, your blood's going to boil in 17 seconds.
Yeah.
So,
how do you make it habitable?
Yeah.
It's like, put like a nuke in its core or something?
That's weird.
So
some Elon Musk insanity.
Yeah.
So, mildish spoilers. So, the idea is that you go to these ancient civilization AI race tech, and they have abilities to alter the weather.
And so that's
how you make them habitable.
You get that on the opening mission. Okay, yeah. So that's sort of the...
So it clears the radiation on the first planet, and then another one makes it, like, way less cold. Or
You're terraforming, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why, and, like, I could see why there's not as much life if that's what's happening.
Sure.
It's like, if they it's struggling to survive.
Yeah. Like, from the get-go, they kind of introduce this as being like, oh, this is like a far cry from the previous games, in that, like, they open up with that, like, Ghost Riders in the Sky, like, the idea that you're going to be like, oh, you're exploring, like, new territory. This is a whole new galaxy. But it also doesn't... It seems like they're still kind of playing it close to home, you know? Like, they're throwing in a lot of familiar bits and pieces.
There are themes that are very recognizable. It's like, oh, I remember this from this other game because we kind of did something similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it feels to me, again, having only played the opening, like, a lot less than you have, it feels very Force Awakens-y in terms of sort of retreading a lot of the same ground, but I don't think it's quite as effective as Force Awakens.
That's funny, because I was going to ask you sort of like that scene in Rogue One where they zoom in on the blue milk, and they're like, remember that?
Yeah.
You guys like that, right?
In this case, it's a blue woman.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there are so many references to the original trilogy. Like, we have a page going, you should check on our wiki.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of really great stuff there that's subtle. Mm-hmm. Like, if you didn't know, it wouldn't really matter.
Right.
But if you do, then it's like, oh, I remember that time that thing happened to that person. And
so does that feel good, though, like those references? Or does it feel like kind of ham-fisted?
No, I like them a lot.
Oh, good. Good.
And, like, you do actively have to go and look for them. Mm. Like, there are a lot of side quests that has that. Or, like, maybe you'll find a character who's related to another character. And, like, unless you dig deeper in the conversations, they don't confirm that.
Yeah.
But if you just know the name, so it's like, say you know the name of a certain Turian, not from your, like, a side quest Turian, then you're like, oh, this person's related to that person. That's so cool. And then you kind of figure out why they're there and all this other stuff.
Yeah, so you were explaining it is sort of a weird pre-sequel to Mass Effect 3.
Yes. So on the timeline, the Andromeda Initiative leaves the Milky Way towards the end of Mass Effect 2.
Okay, so Commander Shepard, whether it's a male or female, which you get to choose when you make a character, which I think is cool.
So it's important to make a character. Like, even if you're just playing default writer, either Scott or Sarah, like, it is important to make your character because you get to choose a lot of stuff. Side note. But.
Oh, but then so you leave, the Andromeda mission leaves near the end of 2.
Yes.
And then it's like hundreds of years into the...
It takes them 600 years to get there. So they're just like in stasis pods and then wake up. It's like, oh, 600 years later.
So the events of 3 are over, but they don't really know.
They have no way, as far as we know, of knowing what happened.
Okay, so that sounds overly complicated. You know, if you're trying to get new people involved in a franchise, it sounds like that's just kind of like, well, the Assassin's Creed problem of, like, still kind of tying it to previous stuff. And it's possible to have elements that are there to appeal to fans of the series, but, like, I feel like doing it this way is just immediately kind of like, wait, did I miss something? Am I late to the party on this?
I think it sounds more confusing and convoluted than it is.
Yeah, I mean, like, no one's going to come out and tell you, hey, they left at the end of Mass Effect 2. Like, it doesn't really note that. So it's confusing if you're paying attention to the details if you weren't.
I guess I was just sort of hoping that this would be like a hard, either like a hard prequel or a hard reboot type of thing.
Sure.
Like, the way it was early, like pitched early on of it being like, oh, you're exploring these frontier planets sounded really cool. Like, the idea of it being set way, way before the Mass Effect series, before, like, the Mass Relays, in effect, no pun intended, is just to be like, oh, you're going to help colonize these planets and help terraform them. But, like, it's after the Mass Effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
It just... The offshoot. Just like they just went timeline.
Yeah. So Joel Myers from the Facebook group asks, would you recommend Mass Effect Andromeda to someone who has never played a Mass Effect game?
I think you can play this just fine.
Yes.
Would you recommend it?
I would recommend it.
Yeah,
I
mean, it seems cool so far.
I really like this game. So, like, we haven't gotten to that point, but sure, this is not to the same caliber of the original trilogy. But with that said, I still really like this game. Yeah. Combat's a ton of fun. I like exploring. I really like the character missions. Like, once you get past the initial 10 hours or whatever, it does open up a lot more. And as you get to know the characters, like, they really start standing out.
Yeah. Yeah, I took a big, a leap in mechanics from Mass Effect 1 to this is just night and day.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, like, if I would have played 2 and 3, it would have been a gradual climb to here. But, like, the shooting feels good. The cover feels good. I mean, like the powers. Everything feels sort of streamlined, but still RPG-ish.
Even stuff I've seen from the jump from 3 to this seems like it's a pretty huge departure.
Yeah. It's way different because all other Mass Effects have been based on a class. So you pick one, you get locked in. You can only do set abilities and use set weapons unless you get certain perks. But this one's just like, hey, do you want to use any of the powers, go for it.
Yeah, you have to choose something.
Like, so, that's fun.
It's like Dark Souls, where you choose a class at the beginning, but, like, ultimately, after a couple levels, you could be whatever you want. Like, it's totally fine.
Just and then you can change your specialization class at any time, and, like, there's a lot of flexibility with that I really enjoy.
Yeah. Is it like, proper kind of open world, or is it, like, does it feel a little bit like Inquisition in that there's, like, different worlds to explore.
Like nodes you can sort of...
Oh, there's, like, very big open worlds.
Yeah,
there's,
I mean, the
like, five places that are massive.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Cool. Yeah, the planets are way bigger than anything.
So we've seen a lot of backlash against the character models and the animation. Some of that reaction has gotten downright toxic, which is disgusting. Don't do that. And if you know someone doing that, punch them in the mouth.
Yeah.
What? Do you think this is overblown? Like the amount of people that are really making this a big deal?
There are definitely like weird moments where like... And then it's like, oh, having played this on PC and Xbox, like, oh, that looked way better on PC than it does on Xbox.
Interesting.
But... I mean, I think some of the criticism is absolutely fair, but it is way overblown.
Yeah.
I think it's also they're shifting from whatever the old engine was to Frostbite, which all EA games are on now. And that was developed by DICE for shooters. I don't think it was made for doing cutscenes and whatnot.
Yeah. And I mean, they have so many character models. It's like, how are you going to make all of them perfect? Like, this is, I was talking before, it's like, this is not Uncharted, where they have like five main characters that are important to anime.
Right.
So you're going to talk to so many people that, like, I mean, just look at Fallout. It's not perfect either.
Yeah.
Right. But, like, sure, there are like really exaggerated motions that are unnatural. Like, I'm not going to cover that up.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, it's
of course
weird, but it's not.
It's not game breaking.
Does the voice acting kind of make up for that? Is the voice acting strong?
I love the voice acting. Like,
that's
across
great.
The board, like, even minor characters. I mean, sometimes you'll hear like a random person shouting in the background. Sounds a little weird.
I'm reloading. But,
every once in a while, you'll also come across like a known like voice actor, celebrity. Like,
yeah.
You got to like Kumail Nanjiani's character. And I'm like, oh, it's you.
Oh, that's
hello,
so cool.
Kumail.
Cool.
Yeah, so that definitely gives more of an expression because it's so well done. So,
right.
I think that helps a lot.
I think the reception is especially a weird one because partially there was that whole debacle surrounding Mass Effect 3's ending and people being mad about that and just people kind of having
seriously.
I mean, it's such like an just an epic, like, for the most part, really good series ended on such a down note, and there was so much like hatred and vitriol floating around for that. And then this is kind of coming out, like, if this was a brand new game, I feel like people would be more receptive to it almost, but would it have gotten made on this scale if it were?
Yeah,
probably not.
Probably not. I mean, it's also like it's a victim of like crappy timing, just in terms of this Q1 has been a sort of remarkable quarter for video games just across
especially
the board.
Open world games.
Especially open world games.
The last two we've had, right?
Yeah, but I mean, even starting with like Gravity Rush. Like Gravity Rush was this incredible way to start the year, going into Resident Evil, and then, you know, a bunch of people loved For Honor and Wildlands, which
Neo, Horizon, Zelda, Night in the Woods, and we're getting Persona around the corner.
Yeah, like, it's insane. So to have to piggyback on Horizon and Zelda especially, I feel like you're just sort of damned.
Yeah, especially because it's always been, Mass Effect's always been kind of jack of all trades, like master of none, you know? It's like people play it for different reasons, but like this is not like a open world go do anything kind of thing. This is an RPG and a shooting game and a story game kind of all rolled into this, you know, they're trying to do a lot here.
Yeah, for sure. And it shows like this thing could have been better, but then we had this 20 other things to do, which I think is also fine. Like, if you just want to spend 100 hours in this world, you totally can.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, do you think this is the kind of game that could have, like, benefited from another 6 or 7 months of development? Or is
I mean, like, they have a lot of stuff to patch. Like, we've run into bugs that stop missions. Like, you just can't.
Oh, wow.
It's only happened twice, and that was before they started releasing patches. But I know that they're very actively working on fixing what people are complaining about or what they have qualms with.
And I mean, it sucks. Just at the end of the day, it's, you know, a publicly traded company is beholden to the to its investors.
Yeah.
And so I'm imagining this is a thing where it got pushed a couple times. They're like, you got to get out by the end of the fiscal quarter.
You got to make it. I mean, I don't think any of us could even begin to understand how complex creating something like this is.
Oh, so. Yeah.
No, absolutely. And we have like friends who went into game dev and they're guys, we don't know anything from this side, like until you get to the other side.
Well, I mean, that's all business and it's very boring. So let's talk about what we really want to talk about. Gabriel Andreago says, how many aliens have you had sex in ME? Which is a really weird way of
Totally wrote, how many aliens have you had sex in me?
How many aliens have you had sex in me?
You got, and like, I was so like, worked up right now. You got kind of off topic there.
We're answering that because so I don't know how many aliens have had sex in him.
Yeah, so one of the biggest things for us on Wikis is making sure we get that romance going.
The ones from like people. From 2 and 3 were like, they were pretty PG-13. Like they were like steamish. And I saw like part of one of these on IGN, which was using Dan Stapleton's review character, who looked like Raggedy Andy.
Yeah.
Or like one of the
Wet Bandits. Yeah. Did you post that? Yeah.
Yeah, he's like Mad Max Carrot Top.
It's
like,
really awful.
It's disturbing.
And so he's just like,
what's wrong with you, Dan?
He's just all having sex and there's like butt cheeks and, you know, nudity, and I was just like, this is weird.
Yeah. Nudity. And I think they're done really well. Like there's this scene you get with PB. So most of these scenes you get two parts. Like either it's a relationship thing of romance, or like more of a romantic scene versus sexual scene, and then you'll eventually get a sexual scene for most of these, which I like, is it creates a little bit like a little bit more nuance. Like there's only this is not a dating game. Like, they have made it very clear. It's like, this is a action RPG. This is not about the dating, though we do put, you know, a focus on dating.
It's an RPG
and, like,
where you get some action is what it is. Hey.
Yeah. and the few scenes that I have seen are really tasteful, I think. Mm-hmm. Like I like that. Of course, a big part of that is consent, too. Like, they constantly stop, like, hey, do you want to do this? Or is this the kind of relationship you want?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, like, there's this one culmination scene that I don't want to spoil completely, but the character asks you, like, if you want to have sex or just leave it to be, like, a romantic scene with just them, but commit to a relationship, and you can totally do that.
Don't really, especially, like, big AAA games, don't really do. You just sort of just beats you over the head with a message.
It's like, well, you're getting sex now.
So, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it's like, it's open in terms of like different species and different genders.
Yeah, and there's different kinds of relationships. Like some people don't care if you're in another relationship. They're like, I can just be a side thing. No one has to know.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool. That's a good mechanic to introduce. Yeah. So I just want to do my spaceship.
Yeah.
I got to leave that word.
Yeah. Like a lot of it ends up being with side characters, but there's one that's just like, hey, I want this to be casual.
Yeah.
And like, you can say, I don't want it to be. And she's like, all right.
I think that when games are sort of exploring this theme in a dozen or so years, we're going to look at this one like it was a big step forward for it. I mean, if you think about games in the 90s, it was always just like misogynistic Duke Nukem characters coming up.
You almost called them Duck Nukem.
Duck Nukem.
Hey, baby, you want to get laid? Like, to leave some eggs.
Just gross. Like
he's like, hey, I've got a car and it's full of money.
Like, it's just the worst.
But it's funny that like, this is progressive. And it's progressive because it's just somewhat realistic.
Yeah.
Like, it's just...
That's all it takes.
Like, that's the thing, is it you just need to be simple and realistic. Well, like, this is how it is. Some people are totally fine with something casual.
Like, the reality of most sexual relationships is they're very just kind of simplistic, straightforward, and like, not boring per se, but just like, they're not as... It's not as just completely insane and as over the top as I think games tried to make them for the longest time.
Yeah.
So our idea of what a realistic sex scene would look like in a game has never been just as sort of natural and understanding as it should be.
Yeah,
so.
I tweeted out a joke that I was 5 hours in the game and haven't got to have sex with anything, and that I was upset, and someone was like, someone called me out for being a misogynist and being like, oh, you don't have sex with someone after you meet them for 5 hours. And I'm like, I'm not actually upset.
I mean,
but also I do
that,
sort of, and also I have.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
That's a cute outlook on life.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mass Effect Andromeda. You got all these guides and whatnot. Is this going to be like an ongoing thing? Do we have to chip away at this
I'm
forever?
I'm going to be on this for probably another month.
Wow. Oh.
Then Persona?
I'm not doing Persona, thankfully.
You just get to enjoy it as a human being?
Yeah, play and have a fun time.
That's good.
Cool.
That's good. Yeah. So moving on, we got Dark Souls 3, the Ringed City DLC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's up with this?
So this is coming out on the 28th, which is, I guess next week?
Yeah.
This is the final DLC for Dark Souls 3, which is, in theory, the last Souls game, which means this is the final Souls thing ever.
You know what that means.
That's
Bloodborne
not true. Now, I mean, that also means Bloodborne 2, which we'll get to, but also this is, no way, this is the last Souls game.
No.
Because it turns out money is more powerful than Souls.
There's no way. Why would they ever do that? I mean, that'd be like denying themselves the money, denying the audience something awesome. There's no reason to do that.
And I was sort of underwhelmed by the last piece of DLC, but everything I've played from this and seen from this, especially, I watched Chloe play a ton of it, is awesome because, like, first off, it is pretty much follows, like, Paradise Lost and Dante's Inferno.
Holy crap.
Like, you are going, like, literally towards the apocalypse. And the apocalypse is this, it's called the Ring City because it's every world throughout time is folding into itself.
Oh my
And
Lord.
As you go down the layers of this Ring City, which literally looks like Inception or Doctor Strange, like the city is like folding in on itself.
Like Dark City?
Like Dark City, yeah. Huh. But the thing is, as you go down the Ring City, you are going down the history of the Souls games. So like the upper crust is ostensibly Dark Souls 3. And then you got down to an area that's the Ashen Peak from Dark Souls 2.
Oh, that's so cool.
And what I just assume is at the bottom is some like Dark Souls 1 First Flame, like OG Gwyn, like all that stuff we're looking for. And gameplay wise, what we've played is super cool. And it's pulling in even certain stuff from Bloodborne. Like, you remember the Gatling gun dude in Bloodborne?
Yep.
And you're just like, you enter this area and you're like, well, this is a puzzle for me to have to figure out, how do I get this dude off this tower? Because he's literally just spraying everywhere.
I hate him.
I enter this area with this. I'm sorry.
It's one of my favorite moments in that game, by the way, because I snuck up behind the ladder and he went to shoot me and then he fell and committed suicide. And I got up there and I was like, yes, my tower.
Those games are such a weird roll of the dice where either you're going to have a boss fight that keeps you like swearing at your TV for 6 hours straight. Or that's going to walk off the ledge.
Yeah. And you're like,
I've seen so many instances of like, here's like the last boss and he tripped. And you're like, what?
Why? Yeah. Thank you.
But like this one was just, it was this like floating angel who just, instead of having a Gatling gun, it was just a constant stream of light arrows. And so you're like ducking from cover to cover and you're like, you're trying to find, it's ultimately controlled by this one little like, sissy shaman in a corner. And so instead of fighting the angel, you just have to fight the sissy shaman. And once you kill him, the angel's like, all right, I'm gone.
What?
Really good. Yeah. And then there was a boss that was, it was called the Demon in Pain and the Demon from Below. And it's these two like Bahamut gargoyle looking fools that you had to fight.
Ah, man.
Yeah. Bahamut.
I think I saw my voice.
Did you really?
Was it like a county fair?
Did they finally reveal who let the dogs out?
Who let the dark souls?
Okay. That's a free advertising campaign.
Yeah. I'm sure From Software is definitely, Miyazaki-san really loves that.
Wow.
That joke's so bad I did a hand phone.
Yeah,
for
don't
it.
Do that.
Call me on my old hand phone.
But no, if this is really the last Souls thing, we know From Software is currently working on several things.
Mm-hmm.
Like what do you want to see? What do you want to see next?
Before I move on, if this is the last DLC for the Souls, like that's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is a great way to send it off. Back at everything.
And it sounds I was about to say it's totally this like embracing the last three games and just going all into it.
And to be like completely honest, like if this was the last Dark Souls game, that's totally fine.
Like
I think there's a point when you want to stop making something, like even though if people want it, like let it have its end.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
let it
move on to something new.
Let this be Return of the King and not don't give us the Hobbit trilogy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that kind of thing.
Or come back to it like next generation, you know?
Yeah.
I think what we've seen with Bloodborne and even games like Nioh is that you can take that formula and bring it into a new direction.
Yeah.
I think when I recoiled at the idea of them not making another Dark Souls, it's them just going on and making, I don't know, like a rhythm game would really piss me off. But
that'd be great.
Interesting.
Or not.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah.
But no, I do want to see them do more stuff in not necessarily this style, but with that sort of like.
I mean, they created a genre pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Did.
Yeah. In which, I mean, you mentioned Bloodborne 2 earlier. I don't think there's a world where we're not getting a Bloodborne 2.
I cannot wait.
Can we get some Armored Core again?
Miyazaki's talked about wanting to go back to that. Like, I would love this sort of game, but with mechs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, and imagine if there was like.
I'd play the hell out of that.
Yeah, but imagine if it was also. Because I don't think Armored Core never took into account that you were obviously a human. I assume you were a human driving the mech, right? It wasn't like sentient mechs.
They were mechs, you could customize them.
So like, it would be cool if there was like two levels of gameplay where it's like you're the person and you're doing things. I would love
that's always been like one of my favorite. Just kind of, it feels like playing with like old G.I. Joe toys or like Micro Machines or something, where there's the big thing. There's like the little, there's like the level to it. That's what I love about Titanfall. That's what I wanted to love about I think it was like Lost Planet 3.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that like something that's threatening to you or just is completely unstoppable as like a regular sized person, then suddenly you go back and it's like, oh no, this is a different scale for me. You know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Totally. I've always wanted sort of a kaiju game like that has the flow of like Persona, where you are a regular person throughout and you do regular person stuff, whether it's, you know, whether you're high school or like in Evangelion going to school and having relationships game. But then at the end, instead of like going into like
I gotta go home and cry into my Walkman while there's jean shorts wearing cougars on me and my dad doesn't love me and I play the cello.
But instead of going into like the dungeons in like a Persona game, you are getting into your mech or your Eva and you are fighting kaiju. Like, I would love that.
You should play Blaster Master.
I should, yeah. But you don't like go on relationships in that, right?
You have a car named Sophia.
Are you in a relationship with your car?
You might be dating her.
What are you talking about?
There's a car. If you can. You can do anything.
Blaster Master, it's like 50% of that game is a car. The other part.
A car? Is yes, it?
Yeah,
is.
I mean, it's a vehicle with wheels.
It's a four-wheeled vehicle.
Never thought about that as a car.
It's a car. Oh. We're getting in the weeds here.
What kind of cars are great at?
They could drive right through it.
I think it's a truck.
I think his tank has a tread, so I wouldn't consider it a car.
It's kind of a car. Ooh, yeah, I guess so.
It's like a kank.
It's a burger sandwich.
Yeah. Don't say kank. Yeah, it's a burger sandwich.
That's real weird.
Is it bestiality if you have sex with an alien?
I'm not doing it. No.
What? You don't want to talk about the bestiality question?
Sex with an alien is a sandwich.
It's sentient and has opinions and emotions.
Dogs are sentient, though.
Opinions and emotions that
dogs have emotions,
can vocalize.
Yeah.
And
they bark. They poop.
Establish a community and society.
A dog has a purpose.
I'm not trying to like get around. No, stop talking about the dog's purpose.
I'm just thinking about the certain article that I thought about with Mass Effect.
Yeah. I mean, my thing is I'm not trying to condone having sex with a dog because I don't want to have sex with a dog because I'd get very sick.
Thanks for saying that publicly. I'm glad you cleared your name on that one.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, I'm the only one who's on record not wanting to have sex with a dog.
Then well, none so of us want
nobody
to, clearly.
Wants to have sex
it's
with
a
dog
given
here.
That that's not what anyone wants.
All right. Well, you guys followed
suit.
You
just want to pet a dog?
I know. That'd be really nice.
All right.
Really
so here's a good segue. Disney, the afternoon collection is coming out.
Not a good segue at all.
No, that's a pretty good segue.
What if you have sex with a duck?
Life is like a hurricane. Quack, quack, quack. April 18th, $20. You get Chippendales Rescue Rangers, Chippendales Rescue Rangers 2, Darkwing Duck, DuckTales, DuckTales 2, and Tailspin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All NES games, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Remastered. They look fantastic in
1080p.
1080p pixel art. There's concept art, sketches. Well, this was put together by the same team that worked on the Mega Man collection, specifically Frank Cifaldi.
Awesome. Yeah, who we partnered with for Safe
Super
Point.
Awesome guy. I'm really geeked about this because... Chippendales Rescue Rangers, first of all, to go through this list, is one of the original sort of awesome couch co-op games. Yep. It's one of the first, if not the first, co-op platforming game. I played this a ton as a kid with my brother.
Yeah. Like co-op simultaneous, not like you're Mario, you die,
totally.
And I'm Luigi.
If you look at stuff like New Super Mario Brothers and Little Big Planet, where you can like pick up characters and throw them, pick up other things and throw them, this is a precursor to that.
Yeah.
And it's got this sort of like weird Honey, I Shrunk the Kids thing, where like apples are bigger than you, and there's giant trash cans.
The apples were way too big, because like, an apple isn't that much bigger than a chipmunk.
You never know, apples get pretty big.
Yeah,
are chipmunks? Are these chipmunks just very small?
The scale is a mess in this game. But spoilers: this game has one of my favorite final bosses of all time, which is a fat cat in a business suit who put cigar ashes on you. Like he tries to kill you with a cigar, and he's just like, and he's sitting at his desk like drinking gin or whatever.
Rated T for some tobacco use and mild partying.
Rescue Rangers 2 is a little more polished. I really like that game. Darkwing Duck, I think is probably the bad egg, if you will, of the group.
I get it.
And Duck. DuckTales and DuckTales 2 are fantastic.
Darkwing Duck is just kind of like a little platform where you get a gun in that, right?
Yeah.
Well, grapple gun.
Aren't there flying missions too? I'm thinking of Tailspin.
Tailspin is almost all flying missions.
Yeah, Tailspin's almost all flying missions. It's basically a shmup, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But DuckTales and DuckTales 2 are almost Metroidvania-esque action platforming games where they're very non-traditional in their controls. You have to stick hop to like
basically
land on
where
people.
Shovel Knight came from.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, unabashedly.
So they're adding boss rush, time attack. There's a rewind feature, which is really cool. And
that's like, because these games are hard as piss. And so the rewind feature is like, it's like very hardened piss, like real. Just
it's like a cat piss thing.
No, it's like what happens is, if you. So yeah, you're able to rewind, and if you like die, you.
I love
go
that
back
that's a thing that they're doing without. It's not just nerfing a game. It's adding this like layer to it. Like I was playing one of the rare replay games. I think that has that. I was playing Duke Nukem 3D.
Yeah.
You love Battletoads.
Yeah, I don't love Battletoads. We don't talk about that game. No, we
Marty
don't.
Marty loves
no, we
the
don't.
Battletoads.
Reminding
he
of you, Marty.
No, stop it.
Every
time. Stop it. Don't ever say that.
So if you see Marty at any upcoming trade shows, be sure to
people do that at every show.
I love it. It's so much fun for me.
It is
like,
awful.
Are you going to be at PAX East? I'm like, no, I'm not, but Marty is. So if you see him, be sure to ask about Battletoads.
We have Washington, D.C. is currently full of Battletoads. This is not funny anymore.
I think it's pretty funny.
We're currently run by rashes, zits, and pimples.
Yeah, I was playing Duke Nukem 3D on my Vita. Because I was waiting for my Switch to show up and it got delayed and I was like I'm angry I'm going to play Titty City or whatever that first level is called, Red Light Disaster, but yeah, like it's great because you just rewind it and I'm like I have no idea how that works in a video game, but to go back and revisit something like DuckTales where it's like I just got my ass handed to me in 3 frames being able to back that up and
this is interestingly enough not a catch-all for every Capcom Disney game that came to the NES. Stuff like Mickey's Mousecapade and Little Mermaid are not here. This is specifically games that got a Disney Afternoon TV show. Yeah. And if you don't remember, the Disney Afternoon was the best thing. It was the reason to get through school.
That's like what kept us from doing crack, honestly.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. I was going to do a lot of crack after
school.
People
would be like, hey, you want to come do some crack behind the building? We'd be like, no, thanks. I got to see what old Gizmo Duck and those.
Like crack was pretty big in like the late 80s.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
I don't feel like you were offered a ton of it.
You'd come home from school, you'd run away from the crack, and then you'd sit in front of the TV with like a big bowl of like cereal, or you'd get like Gushers or like string.
Yeah, but then they, like,
I thought you were just going to say a big bowl
of crack. Yeah, a big bowl of crack.
Yeah, I feel like this was like the 30 to 35 year olds version of like what Toonami was.
Yeah,
to like the 25 to 30 year olds where you'd come home and watch like Dragon Ball Z and Sailor Moon and Tenchi Muyo. Yeah,
there you go. So, then there was the follow up stuff. There's a bunch of other Disney games that would. You've got this sequel idea.
Yeah, for a 16-bit version.
Yeah.
Aladdin for SNES, which everyone always argues about which version's better.
I played it the Genesis version when I was a baby. Yeah.
So Genesis, you have a sword, right?
Did you play the Genesis version?
So I was a little kid and I remember playing it, but I didn't know what I was
doing. So the Genesis version is kind of widely regarded to be the better one, which in most cases in cross-platform games from that era.
Yeah. Really?
I played the right one. Yep. That's, when I was a child.
Yeah, that's the one by the Earthworm Jim team and like Dave Perry and Shiny. And it was like hand-drawn animations by Disney.
Yep.
But the SNES one was Shinji Mikami's first game.
Which is like, it's very fascinating because
horror.
Yeah.
I mean, we spent the last 3 or 4 years being like, oh, which version of this game is better on PS4, Xbox One, or PC? This was like
literally different games. Different development teams.
So that's really cool. A lot of these games are very difficult, which I love about them.
Sucks.
No, that's also Shinji Mikami. It's great.
Is it really?
It's a two-player top-down.
That's when we get chased by the moose, isn't it?
Goof Troop is...
No, I'm thinking Mickey Mania.
Oh, yeah.
That's that Crash Bandicoot mission in Mickey Mania.
Yeah. Mm. That was David Jaffe's first game.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. That's Mickey Mania is my jam. I love that game so much.
No, Goof Troop is good.
What did you do in Goof Troop?
It is top-down, two-player, and you're solving sort of single-screen puzzles. It's like almost like The Adventures of Lolo meets Link to the Past.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any weapons to kill the enemies with, but you have grappling hooks, and you're like... Yeah, it's really interesting.
What I love about these games...
Weapons, though.
They're not a literal troop. They're a Goof troop. They don't have guns or anything.
Yeah, but they have like...
some funny boys.
Yeah.
What I love
one of them is named Max.
What I love about these games coming to PS4 for the first time is that these were never available on PlayStation in any capacity.
I mean, these were barely available, I don't think Tailspin or Rescue Rangers 2 or Darkwing Duck are available on,
nothing like that. And the closest we got was a couple years ago, there was Way Forward did a DuckTales remaster that was kind of hit or miss. I appreciated the art direction and, the sort of, vault of cool, concept art and all that stuff, but... They added some changes to it that were just not that great.
My fondest memory of that game was at whatever E3 probably 2 years ago, and the Capcom booth was directly next to the Supergiant booth where Greg Kasavin was showing off Transistor. And I went over to play Transistor and talk with him, and all I could hear was bump, 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 bump. And this was the Thursday of E3. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty annoying. He's like, yeah, I've been here for 3 days, and it hasn't stopped.
But life is like a hurricane. I love that song so much. But I think I got sick of that booth and had to walk away from it.
Yeah.
It was just too much.
Yeah. It's real bad.
Yeah. So I hope they do some cool stuff around this. I hope there's a cool physical release with some extra stuff. The way they handled the Way Forward DuckTales remaster was really awesome. We had Stephen P. Lin, who's a video game, retro video game collector, on Up at Noon recently. He told us that the DuckTales, lunchbox that they shipped with that is one of the more rare promo items of the last few years. So yeah, I mean, this is just a cool package. I think it's probably gonna be, what is it, $20 April 18th, so it's out in
six
a month.
Games
it's awesome. I hope we get more of this, more stuff that's sort of the Rare Replay approach
from the vault,
where it's just a bundle of old games. We kind of saw this with Star Wars games recently, where they just threw a bunch of them at you and they were hey, they're cheapo, and they've added a few things or whatever.
I'm sure there's a rights debacle with it, but it seems Disney's getting a little bit better with that.
Yeah. Music licensing is crazy hard.
And
DuckTales ripped off that Hall & Oates song, so that's real,
That's right. The one from 500 Days of Summer?
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't created for that film because that film was from 5 years ago and the Hall & Oates were from the 1980s.
Yeah. Weird. It's also in a lot of other movies.
Yeah. That was a keynote in most Hall & Oates songs, but they had speech impediments and they said, the danger.
All right. So speaking of old weird animals jumping and doing their things, Sonic the Hedgehog.
Dun, 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 dun. So tying it further into this episode, there's a race in Mass Effect Andromeda that kind of looks like Knuckles.
Oh no.
One of my friends pointed it out.
Have you made love to the echidna in space yet?
Can't. Huh?
That Google Glass where in space echidna?
It's really bad, right?
That's
real weird to be like after playing as many a bunch of like Mass Effect games, and there's a bunch of like weird ass artichoke looking aliens there to see one to be like, no, thank you, I'll pass on that one. And like,
yeah, bring me the Krogan.
Bring me the sexy artichoke people. I want to see them.
A Krogan.
Is the first Krogan you meet in the game a woman? Like the first Krogan I met, and I was like totally taken aback because I'm like, oh,
it's cool.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense that there's women.
Krogan
so
man.
One thing, I know going back to Mass Effect for a second, but there's like so many women of the races, which is nice because you didn't see a lot of them before in the original trilogy.
Right.
It took a while,
right?
And so like you'll see a lot of female Solarians and Krogan.
That's awesome.
Turians,
yeah,
I like it.
What about any females tails? Like the
yes,
details.
You can romance one of them.
All right, so yeah,
not
back
the tails.
To,
oh, the people, I mean.
Back to Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah,
yeah.
So there's two games coming out. There's like Sonic Remix or something.
Sonic
or?
Mania.
Mania.
Yeah. So Sonic Mania is
the thing that a lot of people have been diagnosed with.
Yeah, it's Sonic Mania. Yeah, it was the follow up to Mickey Mania.
It's causing the draw of many things.
Yeah, but Sonic Mania
that looks
is the,
awesome.
Yeah, it's the 2D sort of like chop remake. Like feels like Sonic 2.
Yeah, I played this at PSX, and I'm on record have said I'm not the biggest Sonic fan in the world. I'm sorry. There's probably food you don't like, but I'm not like eat it. Just don't eat it. It's fine. But I played this one at PSX, and it's cool. It's definitely like a step in the right direction. For
yeah, especially considering like Sonic 4 episodes 1 and 2, and never in episode 3 or 4, I believe.
Yeah.
That was sort of, again, not a step in the right direction. But everyone who's played this seems to really dig it. But it got delayed. It was supposed to be spring. Got delayed till summer. But then the follow-up to that was they were like, well, we're sorry, but here's the first footage of Sonic 2017, which is now called Sonic Forces.
Oh, this is cute. Though we like to go fast, sometimes for a great game, you must also wait.
That was Sega's official statement.
Aww,
yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah.
But I think it's really smart. We're talking about this and the fact that there's two different dimensions of nostalgia for this. There's the 2D
literally,
and then there's the 3D. Yeah. And you're like, what do you try to appeal to, you know?
So my memories of Sonic is going to the dentist's office and playing Sonic, like the 3D version.
Oh, really?
At the dentist?
Are you sure that wasn't like a Sonicare?
No, every dentist I've ever been to has had what? At the kid's station. They've had a Sonic.
He does sound a lot like a drill when he speeds up.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, he is. Yeah, you are revving it up.
Without fail.
Like the Sonic Adventure games or like the ones after that?
I don't remember.
You know that Dr. Robotnik is not a licensed medical professional, right?
I just want to prepare you.
Yeah. Every time she leaves, instead of giving like a sucker, they just give you an egg. Here's an egg.
Weird.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, but no, Max, you're totally right. I mean, like, if you look at our generation, we grew up with the 2D Sonic games. And then somebody who's younger grew up with Sonic Adventure and stuff like that on Dreamcast and GameCube.
They want, like, a Sonic the Hedgehog who carries a gun. And
rolling around kiss at a the real speed human of woman. Sound. Yeah. Yeah, that whole thing. They're crazy for that. And for us, it's...
I just remember playing on Xbox 360. Mm-hmm.
Not Sonic 2007, was it?
There was a
remember.
Game called Sonic,
Sonic
the
Hedgehog.
Probably.
That was the one where he had a relationship with a woman. There was Shadow the Hedgehog who had guns.
I just wanted to play Shadow.
There was one where Sonic was dating a real life human.
Yeah, he became a wolf with wolf arms.
Oh, yeah, the wolf
that felt
one.
Like the end of Blank Check where that like 8-year-old boy like tongue kisses a 30-year-old woman and you're like,
oh, that's
horrible. Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
But no, I think it's really good to, I don't even know how you go from that sentence to anything else, but like, they're basically sort of double dipping and kind of they're separating these two separate things. Like they've got there's the weird 3D gritty thing that I look at it and I'm like, that's not for me, and that's fine. And then there's the Mania, which looks like, oh, that looks like fun.
Like, yeah, it's cutesy platforming. Well, it's fun.
And
it's like
it's both of these genres are getting we're in the midst of a good resurgence of them. Like the 2D games, like ever since Shovel Knight, it's like, hey, people could play 2D games and enjoy them in 2017. Like it can sit right alongside Uncharted and The Last of Us. And then for the 3D ones, like 3D character platformers are back in vogue from I'm playing Yooka-Laylee right now for review. You guys got to play Snake Pass.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that
actually.
So speaking of, you know, colorful platforming games that remind me of this sort of N64 Dreamcast era, Max and I just did a Let's Play for a game called Snake Pass with the devs. And they're making a game that's sort of inspired by and evocative of that sort of Rareware era 3D platformer. Mm-hmm. It's coming to PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. But it's a game about a colorful cartoon snake who has to collect things.
I love
but
snakes.
He doesn't. Yeah, they're great. That's I was saying before, it's a top five animal. Max disagreed.
What? Yeah, I don't agree.
They're so cute.
What? Snakes
they're
are
cool.
Not cute.
They're fun.
Yeah, you also think those little bloodborne messengers are cute.
Yeah.
They're adorable. They just want to help you. Those, hold your stuff.
Those like Hot Topic Kadamas. Like,
it's all babies.
There's those little hands like. Blah, 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 blah.
I put them in a flower pot.
Like stillborn Funko Pops. Those awful things.
Great.
It's like a sick Groot.
Yeah, it's like a sick baby Groot.
Charlie Way's cute.
Yeah. So Snake Pass is probably the first game I've ever played where you're controlling a 3D snake and it doesn't, it feels like there's an actual momentum in the movement to the way you're coiling around.
Yeah, you have to like slither back and forth, yeah. Like slalom sort of.
Yeah.
So, when I first heard about this, I think somebody pitched it as, oh, it's like a 3D platformer. It's not. It's a physics game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like this started with a tech demo of like a piece of rope that fell on the ground. And he's like, huh, rope on the ground looks an awful lot like a snake. Mm-hmm. I might be kind of editorializing here.
I think you
but
absolutely are.
Basically, yeah. Like, I mean, the mechanics are... It feels like a 3D Hohokam kind of, like you're moving around and you're trying to collect stuff, but there's a level of like gravity to it. You're not just like this flying like whatever the hell windsock that thing was in that game.
Yeah, it was a windsock.
Was it a windsock? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in this case, you're a snake, which is a much more familiar concept.
It's a ground sock. Yeah.
Yeah. Floor socks, they're called.
Is just a sock?
Yeah, I think that's just a sock.
Yeah, usually. So you're actually a snake, which is the sock of the animal kingdom. Nature's leg.
I can like hook on the legs.
Yeah, that's true.
But I mean, I love because you look at it.
Hey,
and you're like,
hold on. Nature's leg is the leg.
No. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think legs are nature's legs.
No. So anyway, Snake Pass is coming out really soon. It comes out like what, next week?
Next week. Yeah. Next Friday.
It's $20. It's what's really cool about it is it's incredibly like. I don't say this a lot. It's really chill.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't
there's no
die.
Like enemies. You can fall off a ledge. Like,
you can fall off a ledge, but there's no combat. There's no like vicious death animations. Yeah. There's no boss fights. It is just like these playgrounds that you kind of weave and coil around in mm-hmm. and collect things. And doing so unlocks the next level. And there's 15 stages. It's $20. Super relaxed.
Yeah.
It completely plays different than anything I've ever controlled. Mm-hmm. Like any video, and it's very rare to this many decades into video games to be like, oh, they made a new thing. Mm-hmm. You know, everything feels so iterative of something else that this is just like, it feels
sometimes
completely
it
different.
Is, and sometimes it isn't. I feel like there's stuff that, there's tons of old games. Like there's the old cell phone game Snake where you play as a snake, mm-hmm. and it's easy to be like, oh, like mechanically, that's the most advanced snake we've seen. And then it's like, yeah, but what if you took like modern technology and applied that to.
Right.
And this makes me, of course, I'm like, it's great that we get this like really cute little like the snake. If he like gets scared, he's just like
His name's Noodle, and he's got a sidekick named Doodle, who's a hummingbird.
Oh yeah, you can hit the button where like if you're sort of falling, Doodle will come in and like pick up your ass and like he'll get you up there.
Pick
up
really
your,
that's really, so
cool. I don't think it's an ass. It's the end of the snake.
I mean,
I think it's called the conclusion. Is the end?
It's called the full stop.
But like it's. I love that we're getting this, and now I hope that somebody goes in and they're like, yeah, this is pretty good, but I want to make a super violent game where you're an anaconda and you go around eating like Ice Cube and John Ford.
So apparently like the lead creator of this game had pet snakes and for a while wanted to make a realistic snake game and then was like, you know what, let's like take the movement and keep it realistic, but the part where like they eat a pig and turn into the shape of it and molt their disgusting skin and leave it on the floor like a threat, we're not going to do that stuff.
It's probably a good idea.
I was like, that's probably a good idea. And if you think about like the simulation games we've gotten, like Goat Simulator, and then you look at like on the iOS store, we were in this very long, boring meeting a couple of years ago here at IGN, and I got this game called like Stray Dog Simulator. I was playing it on my phone, and it's just like there's like a poop button, and you can go on and pee on the man's leg and stuff, you know, the leg of the natural kingdom. And I was like, well, this is a very shoddy, crappy way to handle like sort of like a day in the life of an animal. And I like the idea of them taking this in a different direction, making it fantasy driven and making it fun and quirky and non combative, you know?
Yeah. What's funny though is we got a game like Goat Simulator, which is like, it's called Simulator. It's not, I'm not going to say realistic, but aesthetically it goes
what?
For more.
Plenty of goats commit suicide off of a Ferris
wheel. They
also
become demons.
Yeah, they also,
all the time.
Visually, it's more realistic. Like they're aiming for like a layer of, you know, it's not cartoony.
Sure.
But then the stuff you do in it is not remotely realistic. Not at all grounded. Okay. And then on the other hand, we've got this game that's about being a snake, and it's like this cartoon snake, but it totally moves like a real snake does.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is kind of an odd like dichotomy there.
Yeah, and he's got emote buttons on the D-pad.
Yeah, it's really
cute. He can just be like, yeah.
Oh, that's so cute.
He's great. He'll just look at the screen and he'll just be like, nah.
He's like, it's me. This
kind of reminds me of like the old like Ren and Stimpy, like Jimmy the Idiot guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's just like, eh. Like, where are your teeth? What are you doing in there?
It's really good.
It's, the developed by Sumo Digital, who handled Little Big Planet 3.
So there's another game coming out really soon on the 20th called Rain World, which is also another platformer that I wanted to bring
Stop
up
it.
Because I'm really excited for it because it's a slug cat.
Yes, it is a slug cat.
So
Thank
cute.
You. Called it.
I said it wasn't a slug cat last week's episode.
Yeah, and I felt you were trying to gaslight me.
I wasn't trying to gaslight you.
Well, yeah, it is.
Yeah, but wait, do you know more about the game than we did? Because that was as much as we knew about the game.
It's very pretty, and it's a platformer, and you can die a lot, and that's what I know. Yeah. And I played it once, and I was really excited about it.
I think it's the first game in the like Spring of Arcade, or whatever they're calling it, Spring Showcase, which includes like everything, which is we'll talk about next week, which is the crazy Double Fine produced game where you go from being a molecule to a galaxy.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, last quick sort of housekeeping plug thing, but there's an awesome sale going on in the PlayStation Store right now for stuff like Journey, Until Dawn.
Oh, it's all first party.
It's all first party stuff.
Yeah, or Sony published stuff.
Yeah. So everything's, or most of the stuff that Sony's published over the last few years.
Yeah, Until Dawn's like $10, which you should totally pick up. That's crazy. Like, such cheap. A fun party.
Yeah. I remember, I think they did this like a year ago with like The Order, and it was going for like $5 or $10.
Totally
and a bunch of people were like, yeah, that's a great price to fly through something like that.
Yeah.
So if there's something you sort of ignored or slept on, jump on that.
Yeah.
Let me tell you for just a moment about Gamefly. It is the leading video game rental service. They have over 9,000 titles to choose from, probably more by now. It lets you try your favorite games and movies before you buy. You can keep the games as long as you want, and you never have to worry about late fees. I mean, with movies, it's kind of just renting, but with games, if it's like a $60 investment for a massive, massive time sink, might make sense to try it on. Plus, you can cancel any time. They also now have movie rentals, too. The premium trial allows you to check out 2 games and or movies at a time. And you can only get this offer by visiting Gamefly.com/beyond. Now go sign up and start playing some new games you never played or revisiting some old favorites absolutely free for 30 days. Beyond!
Now it's time for Rapid Fire, which is the segment of the program in which we take questions from our fine users at Facebook.com/group/podcast beyond. And then we answer them. That's how it works. Groups.com/clouds.net.
Nope. Not a real thing.
At IGN.org. Oliver May asks, with Microsoft launching the Scorpio at the end of the year and Nintendo just having brought out the Switch, what do you think Sony's next move will be? And do you think they will have a new console at E3?
Absolutely not.
No. No. Here's my prediction is they bundle Horizon with the Pro this fall, and they just keep pumping out awesome games and keep making great deals with strong third parties for exclusive stuff. I think that that's probably – like, so here's the thing. Microsoft is obviously going to leverage the power of Scorpio to bring third parties over and really hit home that their games look better on Scorpio than it does on PS4 Pro. But I think – Sony's got the leverage of 50-plus million install base of the PS4, and they can basically say, yeah, but Call of Duty should still give their first DLC to us early and exclusive. This is going to get – it's going to get into a sort of like greedy numbers game, and I think Microsoft is probably going to end up in a phone call bidding war with stuff like Activision and EA and say, hey, you're making Battlefront. Like, make Battlefront look best on Scorpio. But on PS4, it's going to be like, hey, 55 million people own a PS4 or 60 by then. Play there where you'll always be able to connect with another player. So I think they just keep hitting home on first-party stuff. I think we're going to find out more about totally blanking on it, the zombie game.
Days Gone?
Days Gone. Yeah, we'll probably get a release date for that. I'm hoping for this fall. And probably a release date for the new Uncharted stuff as well.
Yeah, which will also probably be this fall.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's great. I mean, that's two games that are basically exclusive coming through them. Yeah, they'll play what they've always been playing, which is a strong, robust library of first and third party games, and just kicking ass with that.
I like they'll how you okay. said library like a Southern judge.
Library, a strong,
library.
Robust library of first
a delicious
and third
library
games.
Plucked from the bush.
Now I'm gonna get in my hammock and drink a nice peach tea.
I really hope they take a look back.
Yeah.
And notice the Vita, and say. We've noticed you.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
And then lift it up and give it a platform at E3.
Yeah, we've been talking about this here and there on the show. We all love our Switch here. Did you end up getting one?
Switch?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, day one.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a fantastic platform, right? And I think the idea of plugging into your TV and then leaving and playing it somewhere else is really cool. And, like, the Vita was just there.
It was a prototype of that idea, pretty much.
So I want, I mean, again, I say this every week, but like, I really want that to be a thing that Sony does because I want, you know, like the Switch is awesome for Zelda and Snipper Clips and other, and, you know, I'll play Snake Pass on there because that's a cool game to bring anywhere. But the idea of them making games on the level that they make them in their own way and making those portable everywhere. I can't imagine playing something like Uncharted 4 on a PS4 Pro or Horizon on a portable without it bursting into flames.
Right.
Yeah,
but we're going to get there in our lifetimes,
I mean,
you know?
Yeah, like I would love to be able to play Persona 5 on a Switch or on a Sony-like Switch handheld device where the screen is big and beautiful and bright.
It's going to be really strange not playing Persona on a Vita.
On a handheld?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, totally.
I only played it on my Vita. First game I played.
Yeah, golden.
So, yeah.
I wish they did some, like, They put out just a new version of a Vita that only accentuated its remote play functions and just made it so you could bring it anywhere.
Yeah.
Like it's effectively a new SKU, but I mean, mostly just the same system.
So the thing is, I just want dating sims because the Vita has a lot of dating sims.
Yeah.
And there's a new one coming out soon.
Yeah. And it's perfect for that.
There are a lot of those on there.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just a great place for them to import more or maybe focus development because like anime is a big thing and it's constantly growing and it's like, hey.
Do you think we'll hear about the Vita at E3? in any way?
No.
There's always that count of how many times it gets said. But last year, between E3 and PSX, I remember like it got mentioned a bunch. Which was
I thought it didn't.
I don't think E3, not during the conference. Not during the conference.
I look for it.
I mean, also there was
Gio Corsi came out and just kept repeating the word Vita. Also like, on Vita.
That was like 3.5 years ago.
Well, time is a flat circle.
Yeah, so I will keep wishing, but
time is a straight line.
Circle is a button on the PS4.
So, real quick, what's a dating sim you recommend for Vita?
Was it Hakuoki? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or no, like Demon what are? Like someone wants to get into dating sims.
Yeah.
Like ground floor.
Hakuoki is a beautiful game. It's about the Warring States here era, and so you date a bunch of samurai. Nice. It's really good.
This is the bird one.
It's you're dating boys, though. Oh, and there's also the bird one, sure, which if you want something weird and it's actually incredibly good, you have to play it a few times. Yeah. The thing is, dating
that game gets crazy. Yeah, the second loop game gets nuts.
So yeah,
if you want to
make love to a samurai in an ancient times or a bird in a high school, the PlayStation Vita is the only
place
to play.
Aren't you a bird who dates girls?
That's a great Vita.
No, you're a girl who dates birds. Yeah, so that one's Hottiful Boyfriend. It's also on PS4.
Yep.
And then the other one's Hottiful.
What does Hottiful mean?
Hey, it's actually a play on the name of the person who wrote it, and it's also hateful.
Oh, wow.
Kind of
real weird.
Angry ass birds.
There's a lot of emotion.
Pigeon's not a top five.
Speaking of birds, Nick Chevalier asks, what are some of your favorite Easter eggs in games?
Oh, man.
Eggs comes from birds.
I was like, speaking of birds.
Yeah, speaking of birds, that worked out really well. Not really an Easter egg. Last year, I loved Nate and Elena sitting down to play Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really cute. And like the banter between them as like Nate is not good at video games.
The banter.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the
banter.
I like the like built-in like Easter eggs and secret things in Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie.
Yep.
Like where it was a failed experiment of you would be able to take a cartridge out and put the next game in. And they're like, the memory can't, this is N64, we can't handle
it. I always really loved that moment in Ocarina of Time where you go to meet the princess in Hyrule Castle and then you can be like, well, thanks. And you look through her windows and there's just like paintings of Mario and Luigi and Peach. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, you know those dudes?
I thought LucasArts always did a really good job. They'd always have an outline of Max's head from Sam and Max somewhere.
Yeah.
And sometimes it would be like a secret cavern in like the Hoth level of Dark Forces or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was the open world? Was it a Far Cry game or Just Cause where they put the hatch from Lost?
Oh, do you remember that?
Was
that?
Yeah.
That
was
that would make more sense.
A couple years ago, I remember that. It was really cool. I love little
There's
nods
in
like
Doom,
that.
I think when you're in Hell, you can find the skeleton of the Fusro Da dude from Skyrim.
Aww.
Yeah. No, he's dead and he's in Hell. Don't awe that.
I really love that.
He went somewhere, it's fine.
Doom 3D, you can find the Doom guy. And
yeah,
he's like, that's one doomed space marine.
In Far Cry Primal, there's a glowing skeleton of a blood dragon.
That's so cool.
Like in just like this hidden purple cave, and you don't really get anything out of it, and you can't walk up to it, but it's like just cool that it's there. Yeah. I love
Ubisoft does a good job with that.
Yeah.
Laurier Hébert Jourdouin says,
Nice work,
trying. ask, owning a Switch has considerably lessened the enjoyment I get from gaming on PS4. I keep thinking, I wish I could undock this and play on the go. Have you also felt that? Do you wish more console would go this way in the future?
Yeah. I mean, we sort of talked about that. Yeah. Like, I really like playing the Switch on my handheld.
Yeah. Like, but I think I don't want that for every console.
No, totally.
I think it's fine that the Switch is doing this.
I think they're taking baby steps with remote play, not just through Vita, but through PC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, PlayStation TV, which they were trying to do for a little while, it just became like this very cumbersome. I couldn't get it to work from room to room in my apartment. But I remember playing Battlefront, not well, but connecting to Battlefront, like from my parents' house in New Jersey to my PS4 in San Francisco, which was like,
it's crazy.
It's so cool. Like, and again, it's choppy and it's slow and it's not getting there, but it's baby steps, right?
Yeah. And one of the things I love about handheld games is even playing them at home. Like, if I'm doing something where I don't have to pay 100% attention, I like doing that and like having a TV show on in the background.
Yeah.
Like, I'm doing that for like random shrines in Zelda and like grinding in RPGs, but I don't want to play Uncharted like that. I don't want to play The Last of Us like that. Like, I want to pay attention to the story and the world and the characters.
It's like taking a look at Gravity Rush, like them moving from the Vita to PS4 was absolutely the right decision.
Yeah, totally.
So,
yeah, even the remaster of 1, like, it felt so much better on PS4 than it did on Vita.
Cameron O'Neill asks, how do you as reviewers and game lovers balance enjoying a game that is just okay versus not enjoying an objectively good game? I didn't love Bloodborne, but I understand why the game is objectively good. It seems like with Mass Effect Andromeda drama, people are confounding an enjoyable game with a good game.
I don't think you can say objectively good.
I don't like The Witness at all. It's not my kind of game, but I can appreciate.
I wasn't crazy about it either.
Yeah, I can appreciate why people enjoy it and what's to love about it. I think there's a level-headedness that anybody can have of saying, I see why this is great, but I personally don't like it. Or it's not my kind of game. Like, there's things we all have preferences, and
like,
that's
totally I can't get into like Overwatch, but I totally understand why the people who are into Overwatch,
which is
love
why
it.
We'd never have you review Overwatch.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You don't play those kinds of games. Yeah. That's not where your expertise lies.
I think there's a value to having an outsider perspective on a review every now and then, but to have somebody who just objectively does not like a thing to come in and review a thing, like, hey, it's Mr. Bully here to poop on Overwatch. It's like, there's no value.
It's like with old, you know, old teachers, they'd be like, oh, why is this the thing? Explain why or why not. Use complete sentences.
Yeah.
In this case, like, I think the core of good criticism is, why is this good? Why is this bad? Explain. You know, just get into it.
Yeah,
you know?
And I think that, like, there's this idea now that you have to love everything that, like, the Metacritic or Rotten Tomatoes has deemed to be great. Mm-hmm. Whereas, I mean, like, I look at something like Fallout 4. When those reviews started rolling in, I do the thing where I'm like, I walk out of a game, I was 25, 30 hours into that game before I put it down. And I was like, this is not for me. I don't see this getting higher than like 8s anywhere because it's just such a mess in so many ways to me personally. And the reviews rolled in, it was like 9s, 9.5s, 10s. And I was like, oh, like I just don't have my finger on the pulse of this.
And everything's not for everyone.
Yeah, everything's not for everyone. Like, yeah. I mean, we all saw Logan together, and Max walked out, and he's like, I really liked it. And you and me were like, I liked some of it.
Yeah.
But then I went into Rotten Tomatoes, and I was like, this is one of the highest-reviewed movies of the year, one of the highest-reviewed comic book movies of all time. I see why it works. I see why people love it. But for me personally, I had some issues with it. And I'm able to detach that from my enjoyment. And I can also just be like, well, yeah, then I won't buy the Blu-ray. Or I
also,
keep
I'm
playing
glad
Fallout.
You enjoyed it. I want people I like to enjoy.
I didn't love
things.
It. I was like, this is all right.
You said it was the best movie you've ever seen.
Yeah.
I said it was the best X-Men movie in the last 5 years, which is like,
you said move over, a river runs through it.
Yeah.
There's a new river in town.
Well, I said it was high art next to X-Men Apocalypse, but that's not saying much.
Oh, that was a bad film with a purple moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Horizon, that is a fantastic, wonderful game that I just wasn't into.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And I was like, I played it far enough to be like, I hear the guts. I understand what it's doing. I totally recognize that as an actual, like, technical masterpiece, but it wasn't for me. And
so what I see a lot, and what kind of keeps us employed, and that will hopefully let you, if you're listening, if you have any sort of, like, interest in ever becoming somebody who speaks or writes or talks about anything critically, is that I think there's a nuanced difference between being like, Max didn't like this game because of this reason, this reason, this reason, but he did like this and he tried this and this didn't work, to I see a lot of people who are just like, that thing sucks. Like,
what does that mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you sure?
But I mean, it's like, maybe you're right, but like,
what does that mean? There's a lot of different types of sucks.
Yeah. Or they're just like, it is a bad game. And I'm like, well, no, it's not. I don't have to cite just a number, a percentage on a aggregate review website.
Yeah, it's like when I started, I actually had to review bad games.
Right.
Yeah. So I know
got
what
the
a bad
same
game
thing
is.
Where they made me like earn.
Yeah.
Like I wanted to review a Zelda game back in the day. And they're like, oh, you haven't earned that yet. And I was like, what does that mean? You know, what was it? What games did you start? Do you remember what your first review was for IGN?
The first review I did as a freelancer, and I don't remember exactly what it was called. It was some online Xbox game that was like tower defense-y or something. I forget what it was. But then my next one was Hot Off a Boyfriend, because that's what I asked for.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
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 Great. One for that, one for you.
Dan was just like, I don't want to date the birds. So
dating birds is way more complex than you think.
Yeah.
And it really is,
it's
guys.
Like,
trust me.
Like XCOM, but with birds.
You know why? You can't bring them anywhere.
Well, you know what? If you love them, they fly away.
It's true.
If you love something, fly, let it fly
actually
away.
Dead. You never
Unless
know.
It's a bird.
Who knows?
So you can't actually.
Oh, no.
Jalen Matthews asks, with the always successful fall launches and the seemingly successful spring launches, do y'all think we'll soon see the end of the summer drought in terms of games? Or do you think dev studios just don't feel inclined to release big games during the summer?
I think all bets are off with that stuff these days.
Yeah.
I mean, the way we see. So the interesting thing on that is that we used to see games traditionally released in one quarter. And the reason that would happen was because that's when the most spending happens, and when that loops back around to the way the fiscal year ends. With the sort of scope and massive games now, they get delayed constantly, and they've gotten delayed into spring and early winter so often now. And those delays have been rewarded with incredible sales. We just got sales numbers on Horizon. It's over 2.5 million. Zelda is doubled or tripled the expectations for the Switch. Yeah. And you lose a couple of things here and there too, right? Like Resident Evil did really well, but I think it's like never up to snuff or what they wanted. We're going to start seeing games that were supposed to come out in the fall that were then supposed to come out in the spring get moved to summer and probably sell exceptionally well. I think there's no time of year now where there isn't an audience and there isn't a market to make money.
And I mean, May through August right now, games we know are coming out, well, are slated to come out are stuff like Injustice and Prey and the Crash Bandicoot trilogy and South Park and Shadow of War. Mm-hmm. And like, those are big games.
Yeah. And I mean, different publishers will kind of stake out different times of the year, partially because of like, you know, fiscal quarters and whatnot, but also I think because they're like, this is our slot, you know?
Yeah.
This is when we're doing to do it. And you also see games that come out in like January, February. And then
look at For Honor. It topped the NPD. And you're like, how did you do that? Like, I mean, that didn't, anecdotally, like, I played that game for a while and I had some good times with it, but I did not expect that game to be the best selling game of that
February.
Month. You know?
Who's playing that?
Like, it got in right before Horizon and Zelda. And right after the holiday season, and people were like, I beat my game from December, or I got these like GameStop fun bucks I want to spend. Yeah. And like all that funnels right back in. So I think like what we want to see is more stuff like that, because then we get less situations like the Tomb Raider Fallout day or the like Ubisoft puts out two games in the same weekend.
Just for us working, it's really nice and they're spread out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like right now, it feels like fall for me.
Oh, totally.
Like how much I've been working, like the capacity is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Which
that's also the scope of the games too that you're covering.
Yeah, because these are all like we mentioned Zelda and Horizon, but then also Mass Effect and Persona are giant like 50 plus hour games.
It's been nonstop.
I mean, luckily after Persona, it seems like everything chills out a little bit for a little while.
Yeah, it would be nice time to catch up. Like, sure, people want things in the summer drought, but I kind of don't, because that's like a great time to catch up on old games or replay something you really
I barely put time to Neo and Nier, and like I want to play those.
Do you guys think that games that were released like early this year, around now or last few months, are we going to get like game of the year releases in the holiday season, or is it like stacked like that?
Yeah,
I kind of saw that with Tomb Raider when it came to PS4. They were like, okay, here's the full package, here's all the bits and pieces.
Well, that was specifically like a legal licensing exclusivity.
Sure. But I mean, I could totally see
the Resident Evil 7 game of the year that has like the birthday DLC and all that stuff bundled in and coming out in October or November to be like, hey, remember this game that everyone loved in January?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at award season for any medium, it's sometimes the blind spot is that first 3 or 4 months of the year. Like it's very seldom that people really, like when we sit down this fall, you might have to like jog some memories to be like, well, what about Resident Evil 7?
Yeah, but
what
I mean, we did a really good job of that last year. I mean, The Witness and Firewatch and Oxenfree.
We're all
even
early,
like,
right?
Yeah, those are all the first like 2 months.
We have a good system in place to make sure we don't forget those things. Yeah. Like we've been way better.
Calendar.
Yeah, about saying, hey, remember this great game? Let's put this on a list now. Yeah.
We also have people who like champion those games year round. Yeah. So that helps. Is like last year, like when fall came, like I was beating The Witness drum super hard.
Right. Because I know that we have this giant Red Dead shaped object landing this fall, and that's going to consume a massive portion of the conversation.
I don't think anyone this fall is going to be like, hey guys, remember Zelda came out this year? I think we'll be fine, because I'll still be like, oh, I have 197 shrines left in this
game. All I'll say is that this will be a fantastic fall for video game debates.
Oh my god.
Last year I was kind of like, I'm not, you know, I wasn't madly in love with The Witness either, and that was up there. And I didn't truly connect with Overwatch either, and those were our two big guns on IGN's for Game of the Year. But this year, man, there's
you could already flesh out a list of 10.
I could do Game of the Year today.
It's gonna be really hard.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a lot of fights and long meetings.
Yeah. And like we haven't seen what Destiny 2 and Battlefront 2 and Call of Duty even look like. We haven't, like, we barely got a glimpse of Mario.
Give us
we got a 30-second trailer for Red Dead.
Arms.
Stop. Arms. We're not talking about arms. Knack 2.
Knack 2. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting that this year.
They announced at E3.
Yeah.
And then Mario?
Yeah, Mario. Mario. You know, you're doing you're doing the guide for Knack 2. Did you know that?
Yeah.
All right.
No.
Well, we need to go take long naps.
I'm not doing that.
Knack naps. There is a Power Rangers red carpet. I'm looking at the wrong camera again. There it is. Hello there. Hi, good to see you.
Hey, baby.
Joshua and Terry from our LA team are going to be hosting a Power Rangers red carpet live stream thing that is live on the 22nd.
That's tomorrow? Or today, I guess, if this is up now.
No, that's tomorrow. Or it's
today.
Don't ever say, you know I don't do well with the tenses. That's That is Wednesday, 6:15 p.m. Pacific time, 1 hour. So if you download this episode fast enough, get in there. They're going to have Bill Hader, the voice of Alpha 5, Elizabeth Banks, Rita Repulsa herself, and all the titular Rangers of Power. Marty wrote that.
You don't
Max
know that.
Max and Brian are hosted. We hosted one of these for, you wrote like five X's. We
well,
did
what
a triple
was that
X
movie
live stream one.
What was that movie called?
There's three X's, not five.
Triple X, Return of the Xander. Or
okay.
Xander
had four X's.
Xander Cage.
Xander Cage Town.
Anyway, Cage is spelled with you can watch that on IGN, YouTube, Twitch, Funster, and Blarm. You can't write stuff like that because I will read it.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
That's exactly what I was thinking about.
Thank you for watching. We will see you guys next week. Oh, yeah, we're all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. He's Agent Bizzle. You're McBiggity. And you're Havoc Rose?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Cool. All right. That's it. Goodbye.
Bye.
Beyond.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.